second hour is on. Let me start with the opposite of what we want to support. Let's start with clip 66 here. This is something that is... I don't know. Maybe this has... I don't think this has ever existed in history. At least not to the degree that it does here. And that's because if it did exist in history, humanity would have died off a long time ago. This is the... Again, I have trouble like even trying to express this because it's so deep-seated. It's so unspeakably evil that I can't even put it into words. But let's go to clip 66 here. Here's a white European woman who has succumbed to all of the propaganda. Let's watch.
Just a little tidbit of information at 44 years old. I have lots of eggs left. I'm very fertile. I got it tested. And I want you to know I'm not going to have any of your babies. I'm not going to reproduce my amazing genetic composition for this country. It's just not going to happen. Sorry. And you'll kill me before you'll rape me. The end.
Yeah, she just sits there blinking for like 10 seconds. That was not the video, for our radio listeners, that was not the video ending and me being silent. That was, she just sits there and smiles for like 10 seconds. Okay, so genetic dead end. She's proud of being a genetic dead end. She denies reality and that at 44, you are a geriatric pregnancy. You're lucky if you're going to get one in. It's not going to be a healthy pregnancy. It's much more likely to have autism. So what are you talking about? So she's denying reality there. She's like, I'm going to deny my genetics to help America. This is what I mean. Do I even need to explain it? Like it's suicidal. It's retarded. It's like counter to continuing existence. So good riddance, lady, but I feel sorry for you. It's just cope, you understand. It's just cope. She has fallen for all of the lies. She has fallen for all of the misdirection. She is going to die alone and miserable. And even at 44, it is likely too late for her to, you know, start the process of meeting a man that she'd want to have kids with. She's probably at least 2 years away from even being married, let alone having kids 9 months after that, ideally. So, yeah, that ain't happening, lady. So I hope it's just cope. I hope you're just coping with your bad life decisions, but maybe you shouldn't. Maybe if what you're feeling is an intense existential dread and unrelenting regret, maybe give advice for women to not follow the path that you're on. Because I don't need to hear any more from you. You ain't happy. And your attempt to convince everybody that you're happy just makes you sound like a suicidal idiot who... should go away for the benefit of the rest of us. Let's go to the opposite now, shall we? Let's go to Monty Fritz, who's running for Tennessee governor, who actually respects our people and our culture. It's wonderful to see. Let's watch.
We're losing our culture in Tennessee and in America. We've over-immigrated. Not only should we deport all the illegals, we should suspend all the H-1B visas and suspend legal immigration until we can restore our cultural values. As your next governor in the state of Tennessee, I will use every resource at my disposal to ensure that we extricate the illegals from the state of Tennessee and that we have a strong voice against Washington for the continued legal immigration that is harming our culture. And as I've carried legislation that made a sentence enhancement of life without parole for illegals who commit violent crimes in Tennessee, we're going to make this a not favorable place for illegals to come and take our money for education, for health care, and for housing. We have got to do that.
That's Monty Fritz for governor. I'll tell you, if I was in Tennessee, he'd have my vote. That's what we should be talking about it.
If you suffer from low energy, if you're not feeling the energy that you used to feel in your younger years, you should try this product and see if it makes a difference for you, because there are many causes of lack of energy, but one of them can be a lack of cellular energy support through pre-methylated nutritional supplements like this that can help you. You can go buy a bottle of vitamins at any store, you know, any Walmart, anywhere that's got cheap B12, which is cyanocobalamin, or the cheap B vitamins, or the cheap minerals like calcium carbonate, which is ground up limestone, you know. Alex Jones doesn't use the cheap low-end versions of these products. And I know this as a nutritionist, as a food scientist. I look at Alex's labels and I'm like, yes, these are the high-end ingredients that I would be using in my own formulations. So really, I'm always impressed with what the Alex Jones store is doing with their product line. So check it out, thealexjonesstore.com, Ultra Methylene Red.
Dismantling the globalist agenda hour by hour. This is The War Room with Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I had a harrowing event last night. So I get home from work. I usually get home, you know, show ends here about 6:30 or about 6. I head out. I usually get home when my family's already eating. That's what was happening last night. Only I got 3 kids, right? Son's 5 years old. I got a 3-year-old daughter and a 1.5-year-old daughter. The 3-year-old daughter had to go to the bathroom. So when I walked in the house, my 3-year-old is with my wife in the bathroom down the hall. And I go over to say hi to them. And I'm like, where are the other kids? And I go, my wife's like, oh, they're eating dinner. And then my son comes running around the corner and is like, she's choking. She's choking on food. So we run over there. And sure enough, my daughter, 1.5-year-old, is like turning blue and not breathing. So we flip her over and pound her on the back. The way you do Heimlich maneuver to kids that we're doing. And it's not really working. But luckily, we have this device that my mom got us when our son was first born. So for 5 years, we've had this device sitting in our closet, and it's like an anti-choking device for kids. And it's basically somebody referred to it as a plunger for your windpipe. It's kind of what it is. You just put it up against kids' mouth, you pull, and it's the vacuum suction. So that worked. So I grabbed that and I did that, and baby starts wailing and she's fine. So thank God. Thank God for my son being a little hero. And running next door and banging. The next door neighbors were like, we thought the cops were at our house, because my son was banging on the door to get their attention when I sent him over there. Anyway, it was chaotic. It was wild. It was madness. And so I'm sitting there like, I'm like, this device is the coolest thing I've ever seen. And if the crew wants to pull up my ex, I tweeted out a video of it or a picture of it. And it's this crazy device. And I'm like, this device is amazing. And later I'm sitting there, and I'm like, I got to tell people about this device, because if we hadn't had it, I don't know what would have happened. And I got a big following. There's somebody out there with a kid. They need to know about this, because this could be the difference between life and death. And part of me is like, I wonder if there's some sort of referral I could get. I wonder if because I know I'm about to tell this story about how it literally saved the life of my child. You really can't get a more compelling story than that for buying a product. Like, hey, you want your child not to die? Get this product. But then I'm just like, but what if I wait 24 hours? What if I reach out and I go, hey, I like this product. Can I get a referral coupon? Can I get 10% of the sales I send you or whatever? And then I'm thinking, what if in that 24 hours, somebody who would have seen my message doesn't, and a kid dies because I was selfish and wanted to try to, you know, make a little money. So I ended up just tweeting it out. So we're not sponsored by them, obviously, and you can get whatever brand or whatever, but just a little PSA here for all the people listening to me out there, if you got grandkids or kids, anybody young, I think it works for adults too. I got to tell you to get this device, because without it, I'm not sure I would have come into work today. Let's just say that. And of course, when stuff like that happens, it's like every minute from that point out, like my kids are just getting away with anything from that point on. It's like, what are we going to do? Punish them? What are we going to do? Be annoyed at them? It's like, no, thank God everybody's healthy. And it really gives you a whole new perspective on things. But that being said, we got to sell some of these. We got to maybe in the Alex Jones store with a new network. Maybe I can have my own branded version so I could actually make money from my suggestion here. But tell you what, in lieu of me getting a percentage of the sales I probably made from that, if you appreciate that type of advice, maybe go get some Methylen Blue. Maybe go buy some Methylen Blue at thealexjonesstore.com. Just as a little thanks if you were so inclined. You can go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. Right now, it is the biggest mega sale in InfoWars history. And while we might not sell any anti-choking devices, the stuff that we have could very well save your life. It will definitely change it if you take it as directed. And certainly if you're lacking some of these key ingredients, some of these essential ingredients that we have in our supplements, you will feel the change. And it very well might save your life, depending on how bad you got it. Right now, you're getting a free InfoWars dog tag and America 250 coin. Every order over $100 gets these two free gifts, an InfoWars dog tag and the America 250 coin. Plus, we're pre-selling silver rounds and Faraday bag. You can get these together, a brand new InfoWars silver round, which, of course, if you want anything from InfoWars, you got to get it now since we are days away, practically hours away from no longer selling InfoWars branded products. Get yours today while you still can. All InfoWars branded products are 20% off right now at thealexjonesstore.com. Go to thealexjonesstore.com to support us and keep us going into the future. thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. Let's get into Mayor Karen Bass here, because a leaked phone call has been unveiled, has been published. PJ Media has the article. Karen Bass faces serious questions after leaked phone call on Palisades fire. Both President Donald Trump and Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass came out of meetings in April expressing optimism that the federal government will come to the aid of feckless and duplicitous mayor and attempt to further help jumpstart the recovery of the Palisades after a devastating 2025 fire wiped out just about everything. And we actually have the audio of this that we can play you here. This is the story from Gateway Pundit. Recording a phone call reveals Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass was warned about dangers of wildfires before her trip to Ghana. So the recording you're about to hear is clip 22, is 3 days before the Palisades fire. So 3 days before the Palisades fire, she's about to leave for Ghana, and she gets a call from a citizen who lives in the Palisades. In the leaked audio, Bass was reportedly talking to John Ale, a local resident and property manager in Santa Monica and Westlake areas. Ali himself confirmed this here. Reports are that Ale called Bass on January 4th, 2025, warning her about the risks tied to the weather, the wind, and dry conditions. In the call, Al said he tried to convince Bass not to leave for Africa, but in the secretly recorded audio, she told Al that she had no intention of canceling her trip in spite of all his warning. To be sure, we've not been able to verify with 100% certainty the validity of this leaked audio, but it's worth noting that neither Bass nor her office has disputed the call's authenticity and the content of the audio. So here's clip 22, the leaked phone call from between a citizen in California and Mayor Karen Bass, days before the Palisades fire destroyed that entire community. Let's watch.
The situation is very dangerous, and I would never do. I will take the criticism before I do a publicity stunt. And frankly, a press conference at this point in time would just be publicity.
I think the neighbors, property owners...
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And the residents. I mean, 41,000 people live within a square mile here.
Yeah.
Families share a one-bedroom apartment.
But they want to hear that something is going to be done.
They want to know it's recognized. But they want to know it's recognized.
Exactly. But if I have a choice between that and compromising something, I just have to go along with it. It's not my area of expertise. I want to make sure that you are safe. And hopefully you can read in between the lines. But I would just appreciate, and it's hard for me to tell you this, but hold tight. You will understand soon.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
And when I am able to talk, I will be happy to go into great detail.
Okay. and you've got me on the street, and you're welcome to call me at any time. I'll call you right back.
No problem. And just in terms of my trip, just so you know, I'm missing 2 work days. Okay. That's it. And if President Biden extends me an invitation, I took it.
Okay, so let's see if we can untangle this, because there are some very bizarre statements in that call. Now, obviously, we don't have the beginning of the call, but using context clues, I think we can understand what happened. So it begins with Karen Bass saying, "The situation is very dangerous, and I would never do. I will take the criticism before I do a publicity stunt, and frankly, a press conference at this time would just be publicity." So it sounds like this guy called her and said, "Hey, there's really dangerous fire conditions here. I think you should do a press conference to let people know that it's dangerous." And according to him, that's what he was calling her about. And so she says a press conference at this time would just be publicity. And she basically says, but they want to hear that something is going to be done. So he's saying, "Hey, there's these really dangerous fire conditions. There's a lot of people living here. Maybe you should go do a press conference where you warn people about this just to raise awareness and let people know, you know, something is being done about it." And she's like, "Well, we're not doing anything about it. So it'd be kind of weird for me to do a press conference, talk about the problems, but not actually present a solution for it." Which, again, if the intention of the press conference is just to raise awareness, then that's an invalid excuse. That doesn't make any sense. It sounds like she's just trying to come up with a reason not to do it. But remember that at this time, the reservoirs had been totally depleted, and they had allowed the, you know, firefighting, you know, the water they need for firefighting to go completely dry. And so a warning like this should have been a chance for Karen Bass to prevent what eventually happened and actually do something to either try to stock the reservoirs or just make sure you had something available on backup. But there was none of that. Of course, on top of all of this, there's no water in the reservoirs to feed the fire hydrants, making the blazes almost impossible to stop. It was not just a failure of leadership. It was borderline criminal. And I would agree. And with that phone call, I think the criminality is manifest. I mean, it's not necessarily cut and dry evidence of foreknowledge, but what does she mean when she says, "If I have a choice between that and compromising something, I just have to go along with it. It's not my area of expertise. I want to make sure that you are safe, and hopefully you can read between the lines. But I would just appreciate, and it's hard for me to tell you this, but hold on tight. You will understand soon." What innocent explanation is there for that statement, for those statements? What does that mean? I guess she's a politician. She's trying to say something without actually saying anything. She's trying to get across. But like, when you say, "Hopefully you can read between the lines," yeah, that means she's saying something that she's not saying out loud. So what is that thing that she wants him to read between the lines about? That, I guess, is the speculation here. But when she says, "It's hard for me to tell you, hold on tight, you'll understand soon," and 3 days later, the Palisades goes up in flames and is completely wiped out, and now, 2 years later, they're not even issuing permits to rebuild as they intend to turn the whole area into a smart city that may have been the purpose from the beginning. Yeah, I'd like to see this investigated, and I'd like to see her put under oath and asked to testify as to what she meant by "read between the lines" and "you'll understand soon." I mean, that is bonkers. That is truly crazy. But in the most innocent interpretation, she simply was forewarned by a citizen about the threat of fire, and she completely ignored it, did nothing about it. And in that way, in addition to the lack of water in the reservoirs, lack of care or concern or, you know, appropriate measures taken to prevent wildfires, like on top of all the other things she did to create the circumstances where the fire could destroy the Palisades, she had foreknowledge and refused to do anything about it. That alone, I would think, would be evidence of criminal negligence at the very least. So that's the most generous interpretation. The least generous interpretation is it sounds like she was hinting that she kind of knew something was happening. and couldn't tell the guy, but that's why she wasn't warning about the fire, because the fire may have been on purpose, actually. And I want to go now to clip number 21. This is Spencer Pratt, friend of the show, friend of InfoWars. He's running against Karen Bass for LA mayor. I assume she's running again, since these people never give up power. But he's running for mayor of LA, and here's what he has to say about the lack of progress made in the rebuilding of the Palisades here 2 years on. Clip 21.
We don't have anybody in LA that fights Sacramento, and these dreams of Sacramento become nightmares of Los Angeles. They have these utopian versions right. of how we should live in Los Angeles, but nobody fights them in Sacramento. And again, as mayor, I'm going to be in their, I'm going to be on their territory. Let me tell you, I'm not just going to be fighting the city council. We need to fight these, whoever's the new governor. I may have to fight that person. The lieutenant governor, I'm going to have to fight that person. I'm going to have to fight these lawmakers, because all these things they're doing are destroying Los Angeles. And no one from L.A. goes to Sacramento and fights these imaginary politicians.
No, Karen Bass is fighting Trump. That's her plan.
You know how, so I was just at this community thing, and one of the people was on a commission. This is one of the craziest things I've heard. And after the Palisades fire, there was a Zoom with all the commissioners. She said there was like 150. She said, you can ask my 12-year-old daughter. She witnessed it. And Karen Bass gets on, and she says, oh, yeah, Trump just said about rushing the permits. That was after that firehouse. And she's like, I'm not going to do any of what he said. And yeah. that lady who was at that meeting said, that's when I resigned from the commission. She said it was the most. She said, these are all these people who lost their homes, and she's doing this politics right. thing about 7,000 homes burned down.
She's doing F Trump. I know. They look at their number one, their raison d'etre, and the number one goal for being in their position is to fight Trump, not to help Los Angelinos. And by the way, Trump showed up, and Trump said, let's get this cleaned up and let's get going and let people do it tonight and let's expedite. And now she's just doing the opposite. So, you know, if Trump said to a vegan, I love that cow, the vegan would shoot the cow. That's how nuts these people are.
Yeah, that's a funny way to put it. But I mean, you know, literally it's like, well, Trump wants us to not cut ourselves with a knife, so let's do it. And it's just like, what? No, yeah, you should expedite the permits. You want to rebuild. That is just the most common, but they don't want to give Trump a perceived victory. And so they will literally ruin the lives of their own constituents. I mean, that could, you know, you're talking about delaying permits. You're talking about a year of someone's life. You're talking about somebody living in a hotel with a storage unit. You're talking about costing them money, maybe forcing them to leave. Like, huge burdens on the citizens. And it's fine. It's a price she's willing to pay to win a non-existent political contest against Trump. Like, what is she even proving? It's one of these bizarre things where it's like, okay, Trump is criticizing you and basically insinuating or intimating that like you're going to slow walk things and the permits are not going to get filed. And so you do exactly what he said you were going to do. It doesn't even make sense on the face of it, but it's this petulant obstructionism that defines their entire worldview. And it's part of why the left is completely unmoored and ridiculous at this point. And they truly are ridiculous. That's just one example where literally they're just like, well, Trump wants you to rebuild your burned house, so that's not happening. It's like, okay, crazy. It's totally crazy. But the left is completely and utterly and outrageously insane. And frankly, I think kind of stupid. And this is the type of thing that first, I didn't jump on it because I thought, okay, you know, I want to go after stuff that's real. I want to go after, like, if Karen Bass is sitting there going, I'm not going to issue permits because Trump says to do it, and I'm not going to do anything that man says. It's like, okay, that's something to talk about because that's something that affects people's lives. It reveals the underlying mentality of the left. It, you know, it's important. It's pertinent. It's insightful. That's the type of stuff I like to cover. Yesterday, Ilhan Omar said World War 11 when she meant World War II. Is that the most important thing? I don't know. I kind of breezed over it. I kind of went, okay, I don't even get that. Like, what? She must have misspoken or something. Then I realized. Then it hit me. And it's because you write World War II with Roman numerals. And it's World War II, and she read that as 11. I didn't realize that for a second. When I finally realized what was actually happening, because I guess the first time I read it, the person had written WW and then the number 2. And when you see it in a Roman numerals, it's like, oh, she literally doesn't know Roman numerals. And she did a Anchorman where she just read what was on the paper without it ever connecting to anything in her brain. You know, she didn't interpret what she was reading. She just read it. So let's go to this video. Clip 23 here. Libs of TikTok posted this. This is Ilhan Omar referring to World War 11. Let's watch.
The last time the Alien Enemies Act was invoked, it was used to detain and deport German, Japanese, Italian immigrants during World War 11.
During World War 11. Yep. Pretty much. Now, the funny thing is, this is from a user named Damien Slash. Because if you remember, AOC made a fool of herself when she talked about cowboys not coming from Spain. And so they actually went in and changed the Wikipedia entry for Vaquero to strip it of its historical accuracy because they wanted to be able to point to it and say, see, AOC was right. And so maybe they'll just do that for World War II. From now on, it's World War 11 because we can't have Ilhan Omar being wrong about something and looking like a total idiot. So we'll have to change things around. Now it's World War 11, and you're a racist bigot if you say otherwise. Let's go to clip 64 here.
Ilhan Omar was not actually wrong to say World War 11. There have been 11 world wars, okay? Number one was the Crusades. Number two was the Mongol invasion. Number three was the Hundred Years' War. Number four was the 30 Years' War. Number five was the 9 Years' War. Number six was the War of Spanish Succession. Number seven was the War of Austrian Succession. Number eight was the 7 Years' War. Number nine was the American Revolutionary War. Number 10 is what you call World War I, and World War 11 is what you call World War II because you don't know deep history, okay? Ilhan Omar and a lot of us on Reddit know deep history, and we have always referred to World War II as World War 11 for this reason, because we understand there have been many world wars, and you don't. So to call her stupid is kind of ironic when you're the moron for not knowing your history. So go and read a history book and come back to me and come back to Ilhan Omar and tell her she's wrong. Because actually, you're wrong. You're uneducated and you're a bigot.
That's right. You're darn tootin'. I couldn't help myself cracking up when he says, there's a lot of us on Reddit that know our history, okay? You want world history from an unbiased, accurate perspective, you're going to want to go to reddit.com. Absolutely. Again, that's a joke from a guy named Damien Slash, who does very funny videos. But there's truth there, right? There's a kernel of truth there that they literally will lie to the ends of the earth. They will rewrite history. They will denounce their own thoughts from 5 minutes ago if they think it's politically advantageous for them to do so. So it's World War 11 from now on. And if you think that the War of Spanish Succession was not a world war, that's because you're a bigot and an Islamophobe. And you need to go to Auschwitz for a trip so you can learn to stop questioning history. History is unquestionable, okay? And when a Democrat gets it wrong, you redefine the word. You rewrite history, and you make sure that everyone bows to Ilhan Omar, even though she is, in fact, very dumb. Very, very dumb.
My people perish for lack of knowledge. That's what the Bible tells us. Another way to say it is, those that don't know history are doomed to repeat it. God has given us compounds in nature that aren't just important, they're vital, they're essential. If you don't have oxygen for 4 minutes, you die. You don't have water for 4 or 5 days, you die. You don't have food for a month, you die. And why is that? Because there's nutrients in the food you need that are essential. Well, iodine is one of the essential nutrients. We have massive shortages of it in our depleted soils. Now, I have a new CIA declassified document I'm going to hit here in just a moment. But first, I want to show you a few headlines. UN study, 2 billion people suffer from vitamin mineral deficiencies, particularly iodine, the number one cause of cognitive disabilities in the world today. Here's another one. Salt smarts how iodine has increased America's IQs. Starting in the 20s, we had super low IQs like iodine. They put it in 15, 20 point increase. My point is, this is a known fact. It just got declassified 2 weeks ago, CIA Operation Artichoke in the 50s. They said, we've been tasked by the big tax-free foundations, the Rockefellers and Carnegies, to dumb down the American people. And we're going to put poisons in the food, the water, and the vaccines to dumb them down to make them more manageable. Absolutely incredible. So right here, ladies and gentlemen, I have taken a few drops of our new T3, even better than X2, pure atomic iodine, and mixed it with our medical-grade methylene blue. Both of these supercharge your cells, clean out your body, and counter the effects of the things now being admitted by the CIA. That fluoride calcifies the pineal gland and jackets your cells where they cannot transmit. Now, I've been telling you this for decades. They have major studies, but now here it is. CIA declassified research. The human body is a liquid crystal that is literally transmitting and receiving a transceiver. And what does fluoride do? It literally blocks that. What goes in and strips that out? Iodine and methylene blue, they act in different ways. So this is information that the bad guys not want you to know. Also in the CIA document, they admit that most cancer is microscopic worms. There's hundreds of species that get in and colonize your body, amoebas, and eat your breast, your liver, your brain, you name it. And then they call it a tumor and cancer when they're just areas of your body that have been chewed out. Now, you've seen us with countless doctors and scientists on talking about this. Not all cancer is this, but the majority of it from studies is, and they are again telling you that you just got to die. And if you've got an infection of parasites in your brain or whatever, if they hit it with radiation, it kills the parasites. But the radiation also kills your regular cells. Turns out the majority of people in the world have one form or another of parasite. Here's the Daily Mail. CIA faces furious backlash after a hidden document the potential cure for cancer is declassified after 60 years. We've talked about this for many, many years. We are totally vindicated again. And right now, we finally have the original pure iodine back, but even stronger, now known as T3. The original X2, but even better, at thealexjonesstore.com. Again, ladies and gentlemen, T3 and what it does for your body is amazing. So for a limited time, you can get T3, our new iodine, the very best ever, at thealexjonesstore.com if you're a VIP member for 50% off, regular customers 25% off at thealexjonesstore.com. It funds the operation, total win-win. Now, methylene blue, you fill in 30 minutes on average. Iodine takes about 2 weeks to kick in to get the full effect, but it is just as amazing. You are insane if you don't go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and get our Ultra Methylene Blue and the new T3 that's even better than the next two, the same formula but stronger. Exclusively available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And I thank you so much for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. I'm going to open up the phone lines for your calls in the next hour, so I'm going to try to finish up with a lot of the big stories here in this segment. One thing that's been very disturbing to see is as Israel has taken over the Republican Party, and as they basically weaponized and perverted the Republican Party to serve Israel and Israel exclusively, we've seen members of the Trump administration and now Trump himself coming out against so-called hate speech. This is a little disturbing, but it's perfectly in line with what we've been describing this entire time, which is that these people are not Republicans, whether it's Mark Levin or Alan Dershowitz or Sergey Brin, I believe, just announced he was becoming a Republican. They don't actually care about free speech. They don't actually care about the American nation. They don't actually care about the Second Amendment. They don't care about any of these things because they're not Republicans. They're Israel partisans, and they'll go with whichever party serves that agenda. But they don't genuinely like free speech or anything that a typical right-winger would like, which, again, is kind of awkward. It means that they're redefining conservatism or republicanism as an idea to simply mean support of Israel and nothing else. What's your opinion on free speech? Doesn't matter. Transgenderism, who cares? You know, borders, as long as they're around Israel, we don't care where else they are. So you can believe everything the left believes but support Israel, you're a Republican. If instead you are a diehard far right winger for life like I am, if you don't support Israel, they call you a Democrat. It's crazy. Mental. Retarded. And of course, yesterday, Trump published this post at the official White House X. I do think that the hate speech of the Democrats is very dangerous. I really think it's dangerous for the country. Now, to be fair, he's not talking about hate speech here. He's talking about the literal calls to violence, which is dangerous for the country, which is beyond the scope of the First Amendment when you see the way the people are openly advocating for physical attacks against specific people. You would think that would fall in the category of like an active, open, and legitimate threat, and would then move beyond speech to the action it portends. You're trying to head off that action. But it's not hate speech by any means. But this is, as far as I can tell, kind of an insurmountable problem, because you've got people on the left who have been trained and propagandized into this belief, and we've been covering this since before I worked here. Let's just say that. Like, the idea has been spread for so long, it's been so obvious where this was going, when they would say, your words are violence. And they would actually say that. And the idea was that the ideas you express could make people angry, that anger could drive people to violence, therefore your words are essentially violence. They say that by not accepting trans people, you are committing trans genocide. You haven't done anything, but by expressing opposition to the trans agenda, they say you're committing violence. This was an obvious, this was laying the ground, obviously, for destroying the First Amendment and saying, well, look, we agree with free speech, but what you said is hate. What you said is anti-Semitism, and we have to protect free speech from anti-Semitism. Like, they come up with these insane ideas, but this is the insurmountable part, is that you've got people, like, take Charlie Kirk, for example. You've got people who will say, well, he supported violence, so I'm glad he's dead. He liked guns, so I'm glad he got shot. And this is the type of thing where it's like, okay, so you're not actually against political violence because you just endorse political violence, but you're using the endorsement of political violence as an excuse to endorse political violence. It's hard to like talk about this with people when they genuinely don't actually appreciate the principle of the matter and they don't believe in free speech, but are using it as a weapon against you. It gets a little confusing. And it's especially confusing that it is the Republicans who are now pushing for this. Let's go to this video of Mark Levin, shall we? Because Mark Levin has come out once again declaring his opposition to free speech and his demand that basically everybody who disagrees with him be silenced by the authorities. Let's go to clip number 24. This is the new MAGA. This is the bulwark of the conservative party. This is Americana 101. It's why the First Amendment has to be curtailed, amended, or completely destroyed so that people stop pointing out the horrible actions of Israel. Let's go to clip 24 now.
First time things like this have happened, but it really is problematic because so much of it is protected. And you heard people say, don't you believe in the First Amendment? They don't even know what the First Amendment believes. Do you want to deplatform people? You know, the libs do that. I don't have any problem with deplatforming Nazis or jihadis. I don't have any problem with deplatforming them. What does that mean, deplatforming them? A government law? No. It means that X or Twitter or Facebook or Amazon with Twitch and so forth says, you know what? You're a lowlife. We're not paying, you know, get off our platform. What's wrong with that? It's called private enterprise. I got no problem with that. I mean, what if they have this horrific pornography on? Is that okay? No, it's not okay. What if they have a bunch of drug addicts, you know, shooting up all the time? Is that okay? No, that's not okay. Because our kids have access to it. People who are impressionable have access to it. What if they have people screaming at the top of the lungs saying, assassinate this guy and assassinate that guy? Well, they shouldn't do that. Why? What's the standard? You need to have a standard. What should the law be? What does the Constitution say? I just think we've taken this too far. because we're not even talking about political speech, which is the most protected of all speech. We do limit speech. We limit speech pornography. We limit speech cigarettes on the air and so.
What?
We limit speech booze. We limit speech drugs. And I could go on and on and on.
Yeah, this There's is a little different here, speech. Buddy. See, those are speech, actions right? or they're words encouraging certain actions. He just wants to stop the ideas. He actually wants to stop political speech. He's like, I don't even know what the First Amendment says. He's like, what even is the First Amendment? As if it's like this confusing thing that we can't figure out. Yeah, the First Amendment is, you know, an absolute core of our identity as Americans, something you don't understand because you're not American. If you understood it, you'd be American, but you don't, which is why you're not. He wants to demonize everybody that disagrees with him. He wants to basically use the institutional power of Jewish authority to silence people that they don't like. So, again, we'd be against this even if it was the other way around. He, of course, would be having a conniption fit and freaking out and crying and whining and pooping himself if ever there was a major big tech platform that was like, you know, we're a private company here. I think we're going to silence Jews. I think any expression of Judaism is hate speech, so we're going to silence it. Again, I don't even need to come up with some ridiculous, potential that'll never happen. But it's just obvious that the man has no moral, the man has no ethics, the man has no principle. The man believes in nothing except for, you know, his own people and their material success. We can go to clip 52 here, because this is nothing new. I mean, Mark Levin is against free speech and has been for a while. And he's in favor of massive institutions using their inordinate and unearned power to silence opponents of a foreign state because he's a Quisling traitor. Let's go to clip 52 here. This was a clip that was included in the Eighth Front War. And sounds like he's had a bit of a change of heart, I think. Not about censorship. I mean, he's still very much in favor of censorship. It's just, it goes from sort of this confident, rabble-rousing, you think your podcast is going to change the world, you idiot, to, you know, these podcasters are going to kill us all if we don't silence them, and I love free speech, but I feel in danger. You absolute pussy. Let's go to clip 52 here.
Hitler admirers, Stalin admirers, Jew haters, American haters, Churchill haters, you're damn right we're going to cancel them and deplatform them.
It's called the market system. From the Republican Jewish Coalition.
They don't have a lifetime job like a bureaucrat who we're going to protect. And if they're your friend, there's something wrong with you.
Let's pause it and back it up a little bit, because that's an important part, too. He's not just saying that you're not allowed to think this. You're not allowed to associate with people that think things that he doesn't like. Again, despicable scum. Let's just go back to it. We'll finish it out here, and I'll comment on the other side. But because this is an important part that he's about to get into, where it's he's canceling everybody. It's everybody. You have to love Winston Churchill or you shouldn't be allowed to talk, according to Mark Levin. But the point is, he's like, these aren't bureaucrats with protected jobs. No, they're independent creators whose audience does not require your permission to support them. See, this is the issue. We didn't get jobs from Mark Levin. Mark Levin is not our boss. Jewish people are not our boss. The Republican Jewish Coalition is not our boss. The American people are our customers. So he's acting like, you know, they're not bureaucrats with protected jobs. We should fire them. You're not firing anybody. You're intervening in something that has nothing to do with you. I'm saying something. That person wants to support me. Here comes big fat turd Mark Levin standing in between us and going, aren't you forgetting who needs to get permission for this? You're not firing anybody. You are imposing yourself upon two consenting parties and saying, but I don't consent. Who the hell cares about you at all? Let's go back. Where now he's going to tell you, you can't even be friends with people that don't think what Mark Levin thinks are, you know, self-appointed Jewish overlord. Let's watch.
They don't have a lifetime job like a bureaucrat who we're going to protect. And if they're your friend, there's something wrong with you. No Hitler admirer, Holocaust denier, platformer should be anybody's friend, as a matter of fact. You don't get to wrap your psychotic, mental, unhinged, Nazi around American patriotism.
Okay, we can shut him up. I don't care what he has to say anymore. Again, he's saying all of this because Israel is suffering the consequences for the blatant genocide that they're carrying out in front of the whole world. So again, he doesn't actually care about anything. He doesn't care about free speech, just like he doesn't actually care about genocide. He doesn't care about the Nazis. He doesn't care about the Holocaust. He's doing all of this in service of an actual Holocaust. He just doesn't want it to be against Jewish people. So he's going to weaponize the tragedy of the Holocaust so that they can carry out a real Holocaust. I mean, this is really sick stuff. The redheaded libertarian on X went ahead and threw together a list. These are the people that Mark Levin has called a Nazi in the last year. The Democrats, the Democrat media, an Australian bakery, the Pakistani defense minister, Scott Horton, the entire Libertarian Party, college students, the Ayatollah, Jake Shields, Nick Fuentes, Putin's buddies, Dan Bilzerian, the Houthis, Dave Smith, Tucker Carlson, Beirut, the city of Beirut, Hezbollah, a veteran who asked Mark to be more tolerant, Myron Gaines, the city of London, Hamas, Thomas Friedman, the terrorist, the woke Reich, Graham Plattner, the United Nations, Harvard, Amsterdam, the country of Amsterdam, Columbia University students, the New York Times, or the city of Amsterdam, I should say, Columbia University students, New York Times, the Iranian Nazi regime, the Islamic Nazi regime, the Islamo-Nazi regime, the Islamicist Nazi regime, all of Iran, the new Nazis, a protester on a subway, Rashida Tlaib, Ibrahim Raisi, a New York Times correspondent, Joe Biden's entire State Department, the president of Turkey, college basketball analyst Bruce Pearl, certain Arab liberal and journalists, Arabs, liberals, and journalists, anyone who associates with Dave Smith, reporter Lula Garcia Navarro, ISIS, and 17 random dudes on X. Yeah, just a moderate list of these Nazis, of these filthy Nazis that don't want to help us kill innocent people. Just awful. Just awful. Speaking of just awful, Jonathan Greenblatt, of course, has been making the rounds, head of the ADL. And I got a couple videos from him. I think we'll start with 17 here. Let's start with clip 17. This is Jonathan Greenblatt, ADL CEO and spokesperson, who is, let's just say, following the protocols to a T. Let's go to clip number 17 here. This is Jonathan Greenblatt.
I'm an unapologetic Jew. Like, I'm a proud Jew. I'm a Zionist Jew. I'm the grandson of a Holocaust survivor. I am a proud Jew. I'm an unapologetic Jew. I'm a Zionist Jew. And I'm a Jew who's ready to fight for the things that we have. You know, here I am, and what kind of Jew are you? ADL's what is our mission statement? Like, what we do, stop the defamation of? But that's not our why. Our why, our core purpose, why we were founded.
Oh, I know this one. Hold on, pause it. I know this one. Why they were founded. Well, they were founded in 1913 specifically to protest against the lynching of a rapist and a murderer who was convicted and given a life sentence. And then the Jewish community of Georgia beseeched the governor. Maybe they bribed him. Maybe they had blackmail on him. Somehow they got the governor to issue a pardon or a commutation for the guilty party who was sentenced to death. The people in the city decided, just because this guy's got influential friends in the Capitol doesn't mean that he didn't rape and kill our daughter. So we're going to just hang him and give him the punishment that he has earned. So they did that, and they ignored the governor's pardon. So that's why the ADL was founded. The ADL was founded following that instance in order to protect and preserve and uplift the memory of the Leo Frank, the rapist and murderer who kidnapped a little Catholic girl, murdered her, tried to blame it on a black guy, and then was convicted in the Deep South. Not the black guy. They didn't fall for that story. Instead, the jury, who a large portion of was Jewish, convicted Leo Frank. The Jewish community tried to get him off of the conviction, tried to rescue him from the appropriate punishment for the crime he committed, and he was lynched. So, sorry. I'm not sure what Jonathan Greenblatt's talking about here, but that's the actual reason they were started in the first place. That's why they were founded. And it's basically what they've done ever since. Okay, so sorry. Back to Jonathan Greenblatt. He's talking about the why and the how of the ADL. And the reason they were founded was, of course, to illegitimately provide cover and stop the quote-unquote defamation, a.k.a. accurate reporting on the systematic rape and then support of the rapist by the Jewish community. Back to Jonathan Greenblatt.
Created was not Jews are safe. That's like, that's the hypothesis of what we do. The why is to protect the Jewish people, to protect the Jews. That's why we exist. So we don't exist for some universalist ideal. We exist to protect the Jews. Because when Leo Frank was hanging from a rope,
wait, he actually brought
that
up.
There was no one there to stop it from happening. When Jews were being slaughtered.
So hold on. So what he's actually saying, so pause it here. What he's actually saying is the ADL exists to protect Jews from the consequences of their own actions, from the punishment, from the crimes that they commit. I mean, they might claim that Leo Frank was innocent. He was never innocent. He was charged. He was convicted. He was sentenced. They tried to get a pardon for him, or they did get a pardon for him, but it didn't arrive in time. It didn't go through. The people of the town decided it wasn't that important what the governor thought about it. It was their daughter that had been killed, and they would see justice done. And Jonathan Greenblatt is here saying the ADL has to exist to stop that from happening, to stop the appropriate and lawful punishment for the crimes the Jews commit. They have to intervene and prevent that from happening. What a hero. What a genius. What a humanitarian and a philanthropist, right? How much longer is this video? We'll let him go. Let's see what else he has to say. We got another minute in this video. I bet there's more good stuff. Let's watch.
Jews. Because when Leo Frank was hanging from a rope, there was no one there to stop it from happening.
Correct.
When Jews were being slaughtered, there was no one there to stop it. So that's why we exist. So in this moment, I think the last decade in particular, although I think you could actually roll back the clock even more, in a world of what I'll call intersectionalism and this pathology of victimhood, it's created the conditions in which it's forced us at ADL, and I think all of us as Jews, committed to this notion of liberalism, not in a political way, but in like a as a kind of a social political construct, open societies. It's forced us to call into question some of these basic truths we've held dear for so long.
Oh, my God.
Because, again—
Pause it. So, again, so they are the ones pushing the open society. They're the ones pushing multiculturalism. He's saying it right there. He's like, these liberal ideas that we've forced down everybody's throat, now that they're affecting us, we're having second thoughts. You know, we're really starting to question this whole liberalism thing now that, you know, we've become insane tyrants that want to impose authoritarian on everybody. Maybe this liberalism thing is due for a revisit, perhaps. Again, I mean, these people are just awful. It's just he's just like the worst person in America as far as I'm concerned. But he said something very important there. He said, we do not exist to serve any higher purpose. We do not exist to support some like objective truth or objective charity. He said, we're here to support Jews and basically their like material well-being, which is really interesting because I said this, and this is probably the most anti-Semitic thing I've ever posted. And I really actually questioned, I was like, should I even post this? Because this is like kind of brutal what I'm about to say, but it's true. It's accurate. It's disturbing, and it's now confirmed by the head of the ADL. So I guess it's not anti-Semitic after all. I guess just me and Jonathan Greenblatt are both noticing these things. What I said was this. After making The Eighth Front War, the documentary, I said I watched hundreds and hundreds of clips to make this video. Hours and hours and hours of Jewish groups, speeches, discussions, etc. Never once did I hear about any sort of virtue, charity, outreach, or anything that represented a positive outcome for anyone outside of their own in-group. That might sound obvious, but it's disturbing as somebody who's Christian that when you think about the activities of the church, it's almost always entirely about outreach. It's all charity and saving souls and providing service. It's mission trips to build houses in Honduras or orphanages in Uganda. With Jewish groups, there's no outreach. They don't want converts. They have no message to spread, no moral obligation to uplift others. The only virtues they ever express are, in fact, complete inversions. They'll talk about truth a lot, but what they mean in that is that videos of dead Palestinian children need to be repressed so that the quote-unquote truth that they're all terrorists can dominate. Same with peace. Basically, peace is when Israel can murder with impunity, and terrorism is when their victims defend themselves. But outside of truth, parentheses lies, and peace, parentheses war, the values they discuss are not moral values. It's simply the physical well-being of themselves. I'm happy to be corrected. Feel free to comment here with any videos you can find of Jewish groups unselfishly helping others. Now, that being said, it's not entirely a bad thing. Like, and again, people get confused at this. I don't begrudge Jews for looking after their own material well-being. Everybody should. I'm mad at white people for not doing it enough, to be honest with you. And we could take a note from the Jews in all of this. So I'm not even really criticizing the Jews for that aspect. But what I do see is a lot of language cloaked in the vocabulary of charity and of beneficence and of universal moral good. But it's empty. And like I said there, I mean, it is actually inversion. They talk a lot about truth, but they don't tell the truth. No, they literally say, you know, people have to know the truth about who the Palestinians are, not the videos of them dying. To them, the truth is the underlying context that makes the genocide okay. And I'm not kidding. And I was not going to post it because I feel like it's so kind of, brutal to say this. But I really did watch hours and hours and hours of video, and I was struck by this assumption that doing things exclusively for the Jewish people was a virtue. That was the shocking thing to me, is when people are like, everybody, you know, not just Jews, but everybody, Gentiles alike, the American government, you all have an obligation to uplift the Jews. And it's like, what? Why? What? What are you talking about? I can say everybody has an obligation to uplift their fellow man. I can say you have an obligation to, you know, put yourself second and put others first, because I think, you know, God requires that of us, and it's how we design the universe. But the idea of being like, it is a moral obligation for you to materially support me and my people and not your own people, it's wicked. It's evil. It's sick. And these people train our FBI and receive millions of dollars from our government and have, you know, are writing Sunday school curriculums and have input into the way big tech algorithms are running. Yeah, screw them.
I'm very pleased to announce two new great products at theallocationstore.com that will 100% work and deliver you energy, clarity, and also, when you want to relax, great calm, rest, and sleep. Now, a lot of our products are very complex, game-changing, cutting-edge, you name it. But there's a lot of things that are very simple and proven that are still the best. Now, we have several other great energy formulas at theallocationstore.com, and they're more complex. But Ultimate Energy is very, very simple. And this is one of the most popular, long-running energy combinations on the market at Whole Foods and everywhere else because it really works. It's Ultimate Energy, TheAlexShow.com. Very strong dose of wide-spectrum, organic, time-released caffeine with a big dose of high-quality L-theanine that gives you focus and clarity but relaxes you. So with the caffeine, it's very, very smooth without the letdown, lasts up to 10 hours. That's Ultimate Energy. But when you're ready to relax, Ultimate Chill, a strong dose of high-quality ashwagandha root, known for thousands of years, give people rest, clarity, focus. Doesn't make you tired, just makes you relax, kind of a zen focus. And then on top of that, a big dose of L-theanine that also gives you calm, clear focus. Great rest, great relaxation, great dreams. That's so good for your immune system, your entire body. So some days when I've been working from 5 a.m. to, say, 10 p.m., and I've been, you know, jacked up on our great supplements and you name it, I will go to this formula, Ultimate Chill. That's why I actually came to Big League and said, hey, I'm already using a brand from Whole Foods. This is what's in it. Make it a little bit stronger. So this is a formula I've been using for years to relax. If I'm having trouble being able to kind of ease into non-work mode, and this is how I do it. Simple, proven ingredients that work in a high-quality fusion. Now available at thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.